In Luke chapter 23, and we're talking about Jesus dying for man's sins. All right, and we're on the second page of our handout here, and we were talking last week. We got into talking about the explaining and expressive part about the Lord's Prayer, and then we talked some about how did Jesus feel physically and emotionally as he uttered this prayer. So be thinking about in terms of Jesus on the cross, and all the things that we talked about before, of all that he went through to that point where he's now hanging on the cross. And the question on here is, what did Jesus really want? Okay? And then it has a couple of suggestions here. Did he want rest? Did he want off the cross? Did he want vindication? Did he want justice? What did Jesus really want? Okay? And if you think about it in terms of go all the way back to the garden, when he was praying in the garden, okay, we talked some about that in an earlier session. What did he want there? Okay. Yeah, so there when he was praying, he didn't want to have to go through where he's at right now, right? Okay. But he's gone through all of that. Now he's on the cross. So then that question, okay, what did Jesus really want? Okay, so think about it in terms of where he is right now. What did he really want?
Wanted to complete the will of the Father.
Okay, wanted to do the Father's will. And isn't that what he prayed in the garden when he said, let this cup pass from me, but nevertheless what? Not my will, but your will be done. So ultimately, what he wanted was the Father's will to be accomplished or completed, right? You look at these other things here, and especially, what is vindication? What does that word mean? What is it when we talk about someone being vindicated? What does that mean?
Forgiven.
Not guilty. Found not guilty. But think about, he was accused of a lot of different things, right? Okay, and basically when someone is vindicated, then vindication basically says those things you were accused of are not true. So, okay, you're not guilty of those things, but all these things, they're not true. So vindication really has a lot to do with clearing someone's name. Think about it that way, okay? His name, you know, is cleared once he's been vindicated. Then his name is cleared. He's no longer accused. Everybody realizes, no, he didn't do what he was accused of. He's clear. Okay. Was that, do you think, ever a concern of Jesus? Chuck, you're going like this. Why? I caught you.
I don't think it was.
Okay. Well, why do you say that?
Because he knew who he was and where okay. he came from. And he knew that, you know, what he spoke and what he said was what the Father wanted him to speak and say, and it was true. He had no reason to doubt that, to have any lack of confidence in any of that.
Okay. All right.
Okay. He's not false. He's not. again, because if you really want other people to be confused with the things that he had did, along with things that he had been accused of, and it would have made people, you know, somebody that didn't know him would maybe have been a little bit confused as to, well, you say he did this and he did that, but he still did these other good things, so it would have been kind of confused about who he really was or what he really was.
Okay.
So in order for him to be known as what his father intended for him to be, a savior of mankind, they had to know if he was without sin, didn't do anything, didn't commit any crimes, wasn't accused of the stuff that he said he was accused of.
Okay. All right. So you kind of feel like that he did want that confusion cleared up?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
I think the confusion was cleared up at his death.
Okay.
On the cross when it was all done. And the things that occurred when he died on that cross were vindication right there that, oh, he was who he said he was.
Okay.
You know, that's the way I feel about it.
I don't think there's a right or wrong answer here, by the way. Okay.
I think he felt like that when he died, it would have been clear anyway. And with some, it was clear, and some it wasn't.
Okay.
You know, just like today. Some believe and some don't believe that he walked this earth, that he did these miracles.
Okay.
You know, so, I mean, it's vindicated through for some people, but some still doubt that, you know, he
all
was
right
here, he did what he did.
But do you think that's what he really wanted? In other words, was that, you know, part of his main purpose and goal is to be vindicated and so forth? I would say probably not. We know that, yes, he was vindicated in the eyes of some. Even the Roman centurion that was there, what did he say? Yeah, surely this man was the Son of God, you know. So, but again, that wasn't his main goal, okay? What about justice? He talks about justice on here. He talks about justice. What is that? And did Jesus want justice?
No.
Okay.
Not for them. Not for the men that were doing what they did to him.
Okay.
Because his last words, well, not his last words, but some of his last words were about to give them what he
was
about to do.
Right, and that's what we're talking about here, is those words. So
yeah.
How does that fit into this whole thing about justice? What is justice, by the way? And make sure we understand what justice is so we know how to answer this question.
Justice is getting what you deserve.
Okay, all right. Justice is getting what you deserve. It's getting whatever, you know, you did, you get, you know, if you work for someone, justice is you get paid a fair wage, right? If you commit a crime, justice is you pay the penalty, right? That's justice. So, you know, what? Again, we go back to the prayer that Jesus prayed, tells us that justice was not even on his radar screen, was it? Okay? If he'd have had justice, then what would have happened? Do what now? Well, if he'd have had justice, would he have even needed to have that to say that prayer?
No.
Why not?
10,000 angels and all.
Well, not just that, but go before the crucifixion.
Well, he could have wiped anybody out if he wanted to.
Yeah, but would that have been justice?
Well,
that would have more been revenge, wouldn't it? Okay. If he'd have had justice, then he would have been released from the trials, then would have seen, you know, and even as Pilate saw he's not guilty of anything, wanted to release him, that would have been justice. He didn't deserve to die. Okay? And so he would have been released. But what's the problem with that?
Then it would be an overreaction of sin. He wouldn't have been in the land.
Yeah, you and I would still be lost in our sins, right?
And he showed us mercy.
Okay? Right.
For our sins. And plus he became the intercessor.
Okay. All right? So, watch your toes now. Why is it that justice seems so important to us in our lives today? Something goes wrong, something happens, something, you know, somebody does something. What do we want?
Justice.
We want justice.
Right.
And justice, we want revenge.
Okay. Yeah, sometimes we want revenge too, but at the very least, don't we want justice?
Well, we call it justice, but
yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we want satisfaction.
Okay. All right. We want them to get what's coming to them. We read an article about somebody who's committed some terrible crime, and what's our first thought? They need to, I hope they bury them under the jail, right? You see? Because that would be justice.
Well, or okay? Vengeance.
Because they got what they deserved, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, isn't that, I mean, let's be honest, isn't that how we oftentimes think?
Yeah, well, that is being judgmental. We're judging.
Well, it can be, but I mean, we just, because ultimately the bottom line is we want to be treated what?
Fairly.
We want life to be fair. Okay? And when life's not fair, then we want somebody to pay. Okay? And that, because in our mind, in our, that's justice. Right? Wes, go ahead.
When you said that we want fairness until the shoe is on the other foot.
Ah, yeah.
Then we don't want that.
Yeah. All of a sudden, then we want what?
Mercy.
Right. Okay.
And then by wanting justice, most of the time, we show no compassion at all. Regardless of what the situation is, we have no compassion.
Okay.
Because all the time we don't know whatever that person did or what's going on. We don't even know the whole story behind it. And we just jump right into wanting someone to be condemned for what they have done. No compassion. I mean, all that goes away.
Yeah.
And that hate just, and you hate, what? Why? Have you thought about maybe what's going on, you know, with this person? No, they shouldn't have done what they did. But have you thought about how you know that they don't feel sorry for what they have? What can they say after they have either murdered somebody or raped somebody? What can they say? They can't come and say, I'm sorry. Are you going to accept that?
Well, I agree with you, but it doesn't really even have to be that serious, does it? I mean, you know, all the time we see videos that are posted, you know. They play this video of somebody that did something that they made a mistake, or they, and some of them we look at and go, how did they do that?
Yeah.
Okay? And immediately our thoughts oftentimes turn to, they ought to be fired for that. I mean, I'm guilty of that. I look at them and go, they ought to be fired for doing that. How about y'all? Anybody be honest about that? Yeah. But, you know, do we have that compassion that says, well, maybe let me consider what's happened here and, you know, the circumstances. And they made a mistake, but ultimately, doesn't it come down to the fact that every single one of us have made mistakes in our lives? And what if, you know, something that we did is recorded and you know, it's out there and everybody's demanding that we lose our job or whatever because of what we said or did, or somebody posted something stupid on the internet. Now, by the way, I'll put a plug in here. That's why you should stay off of that stuff, okay? All right? Social media just gets more people in trouble, all right? And so what happens? They posted something really stupid, whether it's a picture or a statement or whatever, and everybody's demanding they get fired and so forth. Man, I tell you, for the grace of God, there goes me. You know, do we lose sight of our own shortcomings? We demand justice and vengeance and all of those kinds of things. Chuck, do you have a comment? Life of sin. Yeah.
I think that's an individual thing, and I know we all need to get caught up in that sometimes, but I think a perfect example of true forgiveness is when I guess it's been about a couple of years ago, so I think his name was Bob, that was killed by the police lady that came to the home. And his brother and a young lady was on stand, and he forgave her, truly forgave her, and wanted to, you know, to give her a hug. And that's a perfect example of true forgiveness.
Yeah.
And it's an individual thing. Nobody knows your heart but the man upstairs. People think things about you, but they don't know. They don't know you. They don't really know you. And so, it can be done. And it is. It's an individual thing. Nobody can tell me what I'm thinking. You know? Or nobody else. You can assume. You know?
Right.
So, true forgiveness, you know, it's out there.
Yeah.
Use it.
We need to be focused more on that. You know, this whole study is really focusing on us being more like Jesus, as we talked about in the last lesson, to have the compassion of Jesus. And here we're talking about being able to have the same concept of dying to ourselves like Jesus, and ultimately the whole issue around forgiveness, to be more like Him. I mentioned a moment ago the idea of all the videos that are posted out there, you know, that of people doing the things that they're doing and so forth. And we need to remember that everything we do is being recorded by God, right? You know, whether it gets posted on the internet or not, God's already seen it. See?
Jesus on my thoughts, because you know those thoughts become actions.
Mm-hmm.
And what you say out of your mouth, and that's what I'm thinking.
Okay. If you were one of his disciples watching this scene unfold, all right, Jesus is there hanging on the cross after all the other stuff that happened to him up to that point, and now he's hanging on the cross. How would you have felt, the question is, when you heard Jesus pray, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do"? Now, I know that's kind of difficult when you think, because we weren't there. Okay? But try to imagine, try to put yourself there as these events are unfolding, and the author is asking us to consider that question. How do you think you would have felt, Charlotte?
We're watching the movie when they did.
Okay, right.
The Passion, and watching that was something else. I felt like I was there. And I felt like, I don't know if I would have been fighting.
Okay.
I mean, physically fighting, trying to get him down. You know, it was just, I can't even explain how I felt when I watched, you know, when I watched the movie. I was like, wow. You know, how, and then I was like, how can they just stand around like that? Really without doing something.
Yeah.
And then it probably was really scared to do, because they know they probably would have been put to death themselves on a cross.
Okay.
You know, but it was something.
All Right.
I felt, I can't even explain so many tears, you know, how.
Yeah, okay. Anybody else?
I'm thinking that it had to be a really humbling experience to hear him say those words out of his mouth.
All right.
You know, all of them, you know, you feel a sorrow, like I said, like Shaw was saying. He had me angry too.
Okay.
That's what I'm, you know.
Okay.
I would go between two things. I think there could be some guilt there. Why don't we do more to protect him? And then the other thing would be, because they were so close to him, such a loving loss, you know, seeing that he loved them and mankind so much, and they knew his words, but, you know, that sense of loss because of their love for him.
Okay. I see another hand over here somewhere.
We are just in awe of his words.
Okay.
They heard him. I have no idea. They heard what he said at that time. They couldn't comprehend that either. But
how can you say that? Mm-hmm. These people that are crucifying him. I can picture myself being there going, forgive them for what they're doing to you. Are you nuts?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I can just picture some of the disciples that, you know, there were a couple of them that were there. Most of them were hiding, but, you know, how could he do that? I want you to go back a moment, okay, to just before all of the events started in the garden, okay, there was a meal. And at that meal, Jesus gave probably one of the most profound teachings of his whole ministry. Do I recall what that was? When he washed the feet of his disciples. Now, you know, we can look at that and go, okay, yeah, so he washed their feet. But you have to consider who all was there. Whose feet did Jesus wash? Yeah, the 12, including Judas and including Peter. So my point here is that Jesus making that statement on the cross, it wasn't just about the cross, right? It started in the upper room. This teaching, and that's really what it is Jesus not demonstrating there in the upper room and there on the cross how he wants us to respond to our enemies, to those who hurt us. See? Father, forgive me. For they don't know what they're doing. And I wonder if sometimes that part of the statement is a part we have, you know, the most difficult part of. They don't know what they're doing. Well, certainly they knew what they were doing. They were crucifying him. Mm-hmm. Roman soldiers knew very well what they were doing. The religious leaders knew very well what they were doing. They were trying to get rid of somebody who was a problem to them.
And they also didn't
believe Jesus. Okay. Would you agree with this statement? Physically, they all knew what they were doing. But spiritually, they were clueless. And that's what he's referring to. They don't know what they're doing. But ultimately, what were they doing?
They needed to do. I mean, what God had.
Okay. Were they not fulfilling God's purpose?
Yes.
See? And they didn't realize that. the soldiers, the Roman soldiers that were used to crucifying people, to them it was just another crucifixion, another Jew that they were killing because they were commanded to do so. And I doubt very seriously that many of them that were involved in all that really cared one way or another. That was part of their duty. It's just another Jew that we won't have any more problems with. Okay. To the religious leadership of the Jews, he was a problem that we're getting rid of. We no longer have to deal with him. Okay. They didn't realize. Not only were they having crucified the very one that they were waiting for, okay, but ultimately they didn't realize that they were fulfilling God's purpose. Okay? But I'd suggest to you there was one other that didn't know what he was doing. Anybody know who that was?
Satan.
Satan didn't know what he was doing. Or if he had, I'd suggest to you, he wouldn't have tried to go down that road. Because ultimately, by Jesus' death, burial, and resurrection, he overcame Satan and death, right? So Satan didn't know what he was doing.
That's the thing I can't understand. He is a spiritual being.
Right.
He couldn't grasp what he was doing. It just doesn't make sense to me.
You're talking about Satan?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think that ultimately what that teaches us is that, yes, Satan is a spiritual being, but he's not God. He's limited in what he knows and what he can do. He's limited by God. Keep in mind, he was created by God. Okay? Not as an evil demon, but as an angel. And he chose to rebel against God, but he was created, so there's no way that he's on equal plane with God. He doesn't know everything that God knows. If he did, then he would be God. You see? So as smart as Satan is, and he's a whole lot smarter than you and I are, okay? He's got a lot more power than you and I do. He doesn't know everything. I've kind of used the illustration, and I think this is, we talk about the crucifixion of Jesus, this is where I oftentimes talk about it. About the game Battleship. How many of y'all are familiar with the game Battleship? Y'all familiar with that? Yeah, I mean, it's to me, that's really what it's like. It's, you know, you have a, everybody has a game board that's kind of like this, and what you do is you put your ships down here on this grid, down on this part, and then your opponent's got theirs in the same thing, and this part is supposed to keep you from being able to see your opponent's ships and where they are. And the idea is you call out grid marks and try to find where their ships are, and they're doing the same to you. Well, it's kind of like, you know, God and Satan are playing Battleship. All right, this is just an analogy, okay? And so to Satan, you know, God's board is just like this. Satan can't see where all of God's ships are. But to God, Satan's board is just like this. God knows everything that Satan's doing, and Satan's over here cheating. He's moving his ships around and, you know, trying to cheat, and God knows everything he's doing. He can see everything. But Satan can't see what God is doing. You see? All Satan knows is where his ships are. All right? So if you think about it that way, maybe that helps to realize that, yeah, Satan's pretty powerful, but he doesn't know everything God is, so he didn't know what he was doing here.
Even the angels in heaven don't know.
No, they don't.
The plans of God.
They don't. See? Can you just picture the angels in heaven when all this was going on? Okay, and there's, you know, Michael and Gabriel up there, you know, with all their angels ready, you know, 10,000, you know. Hey, angels, they're up there ready to go. He said, God, just give us a command. We're ready to go. We'll rescue him right now. And God is going, just wait. Just wait. Because they didn't know. Nobody really knew. except the Father and the Son and the Spirit. And oftentimes when people that we're dealing with in our lives are doing things sometimes that even hurt us, can it not be true of them also that they don't know what they're doing? And we need to consider that. And so, you know, the next question at the bottom of this page is simply, is this prayer of Jesus our prayer? You know? Is that a prayer that you pray? Dealing with different situations and circumstances where, you know, your enemies are maybe getting the upper hand of things and you're suffering, that you can pray that prayer. Top of the next page, verse 46 of Luke chapter 23 tells us that Jesus called out with a loud voice, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." And when he said this, he breathed his last. Or some of your translations say he gave up the ghost. Okay, or the spirit. What does that tell us then about how much Jesus wanted men to be forgiven and how far he was willing to go to have that happen? How about this much? Yeah. Yep. The cross. But the significant thing of this part of this particular statement is that he gave up his spirit. Okay? Why is that so significant? What does that tell us about, you know, again, how far Jesus is willing to go?
He gave it all.
Yeah, he gave everything. Gave it all. But he gave it. It wasn't taken from him. He gave it. See, it's one thing if you don't have a choice, right? But he had a choice. And he chose to give it all.
He knew his crucifixion was key to reconciliation with the Father, and that was the only way.
Okay.
So he, even though he didn't really want to do it, he had to do it, he was willing to do it.
Okay.
Surely he took up our pain and bore our suffering. Yet we considered him punished by God, stricken by him and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was on him,
Because ultimately, it should have been me hanging up there on that cross. It should have been you. Every single one of us. Because we're the ones who sin, not him. So, maybe something that might help us to, you know, have this forgiveness more and more in our lives is, you know, when we're dealing with somebody that's, you know, causing us problems and heartache or whatever it might be, that maybe instead of picturing Jesus on the cross, maybe we might picture ourselves up there. And that might help us to realize that that's what we deserve. But that's not what we got. The author then asks us to consider the two other men that were crucified with Jesus. And he asks the question, how do you think they reacted to being nailed to the cross? Did they struggle? Did they quietly submit? So I think the intention here is that, you know, while they're, you know, and my understanding of it is, you know, the prisoner, the condemned person, would carry the cross piece of the cross to the place of execution, and then that would be met up with the upright beam, and they would be laid on that and be either nailed or tied to the cross. And we know that in this case, they were nailed to the cross. Okay? So, you know, you think about that kind of an execution. How do you suppose these guys might have reacted or been, you know, behaving, you know, to this idea of that, you know, okay, these soldiers are taking them and they're nailing them to this cross? Okay, all right. Spike, yeah.
Your hands and your feet.
Yeah.
They put 1 foot on top of each other. Mm-hmm. And they nail it. I mean, they got to be excruciating. Yeah. Pain.
I mean, I scream when I get a splinter in my finger for crying out loud.
Even watch it, I can
see. You know? And we're talking about nails.
Remember that when you have to have an IV.
I was just thinking that.
You know?
I don't want to hear no screaming. No
yeah,
crying.
Judy over here, she's, you know, she's a crybaby. They ain't going to take blood or whatever from her. And she's gonna, her blood pressure goes skyrocketing. And I'm just picking on her because we were talking about that the other day. You know? How many of us faint at the sight of blood, Pat?
I think I'll probably be begging.
Okay.
Right. I mean, here they are trying to be nailed to the. Yeah, I think I would be big.
Okay. All right. Okay. What do you think Jesus was?
Content.
Okay.
They did say he was fearful.
Okay.
And he prayed in the garden. He was very fearful. He, you know, sweat blood. And I think he was fearful, but I think he submitted to God's will.
And you think Jesus knew beforehand how much it was going to hurt once they pierced his skin with those nails? You know, we have, as we talked about, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we've got the humanity side of Jesus and the spiritual side of him. Okay, both. And, you know, somebody was telling me that, I don't know how he did that, okay? That's far above my pay grade, all right? But I believe that he did. He was fully human, and yet he was fully God.
Well, I think it's, so, you know, definitely as a human person, he was suffering. Mm-hmm. But in his soul, it was good in his soul. It was well in his soul.
Okay.
sure a lot of us have been through medical procedures. And you have to trust other people, but you really have to trust God. I know Jesus is praying the whole time. And you don't know what.
Okay.
Chuck, did you have a comment?
Well, imagine our Savior, what he's been through all day, prior to this point. He is physically exhausted more than a lot of us here. He was mentally exhausted. He was spiritually tired. And yet in all that that happened, we can't help but see certain peace on his face. There's no time. There's no fuzzy words coming out of him. There was those things that led those that were witnessing this to come to the understanding. This is the Son of God. Because he did act in the way that would please Father. I'm looking for vengeance. I'm not looking to get off or begging for mercy or any of that. Okay. He obviously had to go through something that only he could fathom the depths and what it would take. Because ultimately, the Son had a beautiful relationship with the Father that wish we all could have with our Father. Or something he did have, does have. And he knew at that time, sometime in his life, that's going to be separated. That, to me, would be emotionally challenging for him. But he ultimately knew that, yes, that my Father and I would be together again. But again, just thinking of that point, of being separated from the one that you love the most, for a period of time, that's still emotionally traumatizing.
Okay, we got to stop here because we're out of time. Think about the next question on, we'll pick up here next week and try to finish this lesson. How far are we willing to go to have men forgiven? And I want you to think about also, if you want to write it on your sheet and just think about it and contemplate another statement that Jesus made before he died. He said, my God, why have you forsaken me? How that fits into this. All right? Okay, thank you all very much.